This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It's World Wide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We're the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. In the studio tonight, we've got Paul.
Hello.
G'day, Dean.
G'day, Matt.
And myself, Matt. Tonight, we venture to a country where being gay could land you in jail for 14 years, where political leaders openly vilify gays and lesbians without fear or repercussions, where the protestations of the international community seem to go unheard. Tonight, we're off to Nigeria.
Knowing there's so much hatred of gay people, what would inspire someone to come out on a television talk show?
How does social stigma around gay people impact the delivery of HIV prevention programs?
And how did a television soap star become a gay activist listed in the top 100 most powerful gays in the world? To tell his story of LGBTIQ life in Nigeria, tonight we are joined in the studio by Bisi Alimi, a Nigerian activist living in exile in the UK.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Now, we've probably all heard of the nasty pasties at the Westboro Baptist Church, and we did mention them a couple of weeks ago because they were rickrolled by the Foo Fighters.
That's right.
Yes. Now, you've probably heard of it. They've been going for years and years, about 20 years, I think, since Matthew Shepard was murdered back in the day in the States. And there's been a lot of talk, especially on our Facebook page this last week, about the situation in Kentucky, birthplace of Johnny Depp, and a place where that one of their county clerks, a lady by the name of Kim Davis, has refused to be issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples.
Despite the Supreme Court ruling, she just keeps steadfastly saying she's not going to do it.
Yes. Now, her argument is that she is, as a Christian, she can't possibly countenance the thought of same-sex couples getting married, and therefore she shouldn't be forced by the state to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Now, the real...
an argument she keeps losing.
She keeps losing because the reality is it's actually a First Amendment issue in the United States. You're not allowed... separation of church and state is the short answer. And just because you're a county clerk doesn't mean you get to pick and choose which laws you choose to obey. So, for example, I'm a vegetarian. If a hunter came in and asked for a hunting license, I wouldn't be allowed to say, no license for you. I'd have to issue that license. Anyway, you would think that the Westboro Baptist Church would probably be in favour of her because
she'd be their cheer squad.
Their poster girl, because she's actually been sent to jail. So anyway, a federal judge has instructed her to issue the licences and she's been sued. Anyway, she's contempt of court, blah, blah, blah. You've heard this all week long, so she's been sent to jail. She's actually still there. So she refuses to change her mind. She's been there a few days now. But the Westboro Baptist Church don't like her at all.
What? They're against her.
Why is that, Matt?
They're against her because of her hypocrisy. Miss Davis, which has come to light, has been married four times. Now, follow this. I'll draw you a chart, a verbal chart. She divorced her first husband after committing adultery mm-hmm. with her third husband and becoming uh-huh. pregnant with twins.
Mm-hmm.
Her second husband adopted the children, but she eventually divorced him to marry the children's biological father and then divorced him to remarry her second husband. Should I say that again? No. No.
It's all very rather incestuous, really.
It is indeed. And so Westboro have come out against her, tweeting that they really just don't like her.
And there's a number of tweets, and we're not really going to repeat them on air because they use nasty, crass language. But one of the tweets that we can repeat is, what if a clerk denied Kim Davis a license for her second, third, fourth marriage because Christ calls it adultery? They're not impressed, in fact, at all. And we Surprisingly.
Now, something I feel really dirty about this next bit, Dean.
You're a bit of a shame to say this.
No, not at all. I think it's great that, you know, we have a broad church of listeners here. So we have a Twitter feed, and everything we post on our Facebook page is also tweeted.
So it's at W3Joy. You can follow us.
That's it. And shortly after we posted this particular story, Westboro Baptist Church actually happened to stumble across this tweet. And
we're being followed by Westboro Baptist Church. Oh, I feel so dirty.
Don't think they've quite worked out what joy is all about.
No, yeah.
That's not.
They're obviously a bit busy. But anyway, not only did they retweet, they replied. So there you go. And that's going to be posted on our Facebook page, just so you know we're not big liars.
Over in Malawi, there's been a rumour that they possibly may have a referendum on LGBT rights when the president hinted that there was a change coming to the country.
So Peter Mutharika said that on the issue of gay marriages, again, I have said that our Democratic Progressive Party manifesto and that we will leave that to the people.
And of course, many news stations have picked up on this and considered this a step forward for LGBT rights, but perhaps not.
Not so fast.
A State House spokesman has clarified.
Clarified. He misspoke.
What the president was actually talking about, and they were just his personal opinions on the subject.
And of course, we will be delving more into the issues around LGBT people in Africa tonight with our wonderful guest. Across Ukraine are some nasty news where neo-Nazis have destroyed an LGBT group's office and beat one of the men severely in doing so. It's a part of a couple of attacks by neo-Nazis that have sprung up. Six masked men holding fire sticks and iron poles threw smoke bombs into the community centre, trapping several victims. They then went on to bash one of them. Another incident in the area, they attacked a cafe where a small party of LGBT activists was being held. The police did arrive quickly. They caught the perpetrators and then release them.
Their mothers must be so proud.
And there has been international outcry over this incident.
Now, onto some good news. In China, basically, for the first time ever, China's movie regulators have approved the release of a film featuring gay central characters. Now, the film's called...
This is huge.
This is big news. Seek McCartney was co-produced in China and France. Follows two men, one Chinese and one French, who are involved in a secret cross-cultural relationship. And it's big news because it's the first time they've had a film that's got primary characters. Now, China decriminalised homosexuality in 1997, and it was only removed from the Ministry of Health's list of mental illnesses in 2001, and they actually banned Brokeback Mountain there, even though it was directed by Taiwanese Ang Lee, who won the Oscar for it.
Now, it took them 1 year to come to this decision, so it's not a fast process. There was lots of thought involved, and other activists have warned that it really depends on who's looking at your film as to whether it gets through.
That's it. Don't hold your breath.
In brief, Italy is set to approve civil unions by the year's end, the PM says.
A Canadian bus driver has refused to steer any bus decorated in rainbow colours for religious reasons.
The Vatican has announced that trans people cannot be godparents.
And five police officers in the Philippines have been suspended for extorting a gay couple. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hello, this is Wolfgang from Conchita Wurst City, which is Vienna in Austria. You listen to Worldwide Wave from Joy 94.9.
This is Worldwide Wave.
Welcome our guest into the studio, Bisi Alimi from Nigeria, now based in UK.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to delve into a bit of your story tonight. Now, I guess there's many examples. The first things that come to mind when we talk about Nigeria and gay people, a lot of negative thoughts. There's lots of... issues that gay people have, and indeed not very many gay people who are out in Nigeria. Yet you decided to come out on a television talk show, which is pretty public. So I guess what made you decide to come out and to do it so publicly?
Yeah, paint us a picture.
That was a crazy guy, isn't it? Oh, my God. Looking back... Now, it's 11 years, oh my God. It's been a long journey for me. And it was a long journey, actually, getting there. You know, it was very much a choice between allowing a sensational story about my sexuality or actually owning my story. And I think I went for the option to own my story. I was going to be outed anyway.
You're getting in ahead of the game.
Yes, exactly.
Because you're a famous actor.
Yes, yeah. I was on TV. I was practically known. And you know what it is like. Then journalists want to know one or two things. And they got information about my sexuality. And 2004, just when, you know, we were having Facebook. So it was really like a very big thing. And it was about who was going to do it first. And I went through months of panic, of fear of, my God, this is going to be the end of my career. But then I realized that I don't really have a choice. You know, if I come out, my career will end. If they have an exclusive about my life, my career will end anyway. So I'm never going to win in this case. But there's one battle I can win, and that's about me telling my story. And that was what I did.
The TV show you're on, Roses and Thorns, a primetime soap opera, you were having an affair with the housemaid.
Well,
and then you came out as gay.
It's scandalous.
It is very, very, you know. It was it was a very...
We've done our research.
Yes, you have. Yeah, it was a very interesting soap opera, and which was looking at the class system in Nigeria and how you're not allowed to, you know, go outside of your class. So I have this very, my character had this very rich family, and I was expected to go abroad to study. And all of a sudden, cut pants down in the housemaid bedroom. And, you know, the scandal started, and it was as if, you know, it's going to be a scandal anyway, whichever way I go.
Scandal is the keyword.
Yeah.
In coming out, how did that affect your family? What did your family say?
Before, I need to put it out. So I come from a very mixed religious family, which is quite rare in Nigeria. My father is still a Muslim, and my mother is an evangelical Christian. And how they've stayed together for over 50 years,
it's worked.
Yeah, well, it has worked. So, which is that, you know, it's more about love rather than about religion. But my mother was she knew, you know, mothers always know. And she knew about my sexuality. Once in a while, she will come up with this saying that is very typical to her. And she goes, whatever you're doing that God is not happy with, I will advise that you stop doing it. And it was a very difficult period for me because they were not going to listen to me. They were not very supportive for me to come out to them. They have to know the same time. Millions of Nigerians were knowing about my sexuality.
And I guess that's a point, though. So you, in telling your parents is one thing. Telling all the friends of your parents, or them seeing it on television, and I mean, that must have had a big impact on them as well.
It did. And my mother was really upset. And what she said was that you betrayed us. You could have at least given us the opportunity to know before you go out. And, you know, we would have been able to talk you out of it. And I remember telling my mom, you gave me no option, because there were no signals to show that if I ever come out to you, you will understand what I have to do. And I remember telling her that, and I wasn't coming out to you, I was coming out to myself. Because I, at that point, I was trying to have, you know, relationship with girls. I was trying to deceive myself. So being on that show was me, for the first time in my life, actually saying, you know what, you're gay, it's okay, and you can deal with this. It wasn't about me coming out to millions of people. It was about me coming out to myself. Even sitting down in that studio was me telling myself that it's okay to be gay. And I think I just had the opportunity of using that platform.
Bissy, what's the population of Nigeria?
170 million people.
We're not talking about, like, in Australia, we've got a population of 23 million. It's not that big a deal. Like, you must have been a big name.
I wouldn't say that.
You're gone all shy now.
I think after my coming out, it became bigger, because then it was about this crazy man who was on TV who had come out and threw the whole country into this, like, you know, revelation of what really is going on here?
They do exist.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, my God, and, you know, the show got cut off immediately.
Really? They cancelled the show?
Yeah, they cancelled the show immediately because they just couldn't handle the fact that, oh, this is not supposed to be happening yet. So it was a huge shock to everybody in the country.
It also led to yourself being attacked.
Yes, before that I was always attacked, but it became a point of where I can't hide anymore because I was on TV, everybody saw me, and now it's confirmed. So there was no hiding place, and it was a constant thing up until 2007 when I was almost killed in my home and I had to run out of the country.
We're going to explore more of that with our guest, Busy Alimi. You're on World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, c'est Tina René. Vous écoutez La Joie 94.9, darling.
We've had a message in from Greg, who's loving the show so far. He's got a question too, Busy. Who were the perpetrators of the violence? Were they random people, or was it more directed or incited from church or government? Thanks for that, Greg.
Well, the study that came out last year actually had a breakdown of where the hate crime in Nigeria is coming from. Predominantly is from ordinary citizens. But again, we should look at the links between why and what is happening. So ordinary citizens that have been greatly influenced by religious belief, who think that whatever they are doing it to promote and uphold their religious belief. And then, you know, followed by the government. You will never see religious organizations being at the forefront of hate crime in Nigeria, as in like being active. The passive role they play is encourage people to carry out the crime.
Yeah, religious leaders have, or how much pull do religious leaders have if they, speak from the pulpit? Is it something that can incite people to
Nigeria violence? Is a very religious country. Like let me say about 85 to 90% of Nigerians are religious. So when you stand on a pulpit in a congregation of over 1 million people and you tell them that, you know, the gay people are going to bring earthquake and they're going to bring, tsunami, you need to do something
about it. Do we actually have those powers? Tell me more about
this. Well, I think we do. We're like a superhero,
the
you know what I mean?
Superheroes. Now, there's a survey done in 2007. 97% of Nigerians believe that homosexuality is a way of life that should not be accepted. Now, a 2015 survey, which I believe you had some involvement in, the figure dropped to 87%. 87% is still huge, but do you think there's progress going on?
No, whichever way we look at it, it shows a lot of, you know, progress going on. It shows a lot of, something that the LGBT activists in Nigeria should give themselves a pat on the back for. You know, in 5 years, to be able to bring it as low as that is huge work, huge effort in a country where you could go to jail for 14 years for talking about such issues. But these are daredevils who are going out and, you know, using different available media to them to actually promote from podcasts to website to Facebook to Twitter, actually getting the information across to be able to get a lot of people to question what they've been told, what they believe, and open up their arms to be able to understand what these issues are. And when my foundation, BCLME Foundation, did this, we were expecting 2% drop, and we got this and we were like, oh
wow,
is this what we expect? It was huge success. It was like huge news to us, and this is what we hope to do every 18 months to actually track what is going on in the country.
The kind of media you just mentioned are the social media and internet are the domain of young people, and one of the findings in those surveys was that 18 to 25 year olds were more accepting or would accept an LGBT member of their family much, much greater than any other generation. Are you confident that the next generation is open to better views?
Yes, I am. You know, we should not forget Nigeria is one of the highest consumption of modern family outside of America. So, and this is watched by young people and they see the gay family. They watch so many other programs like that. And they question, like I said, they question a lot of things that they know. The unfortunate thing is in a country of 170 million people where young people are mostly, over 70% of young people are unemployed. And the religious institution provides charitable supplement or alternatives to hope and aspiration in life. There is the tendency that they will lose that along the way unless there are proper interventions, which we include, you know, education, employment, better aspiration in life. So I'm afraid that this might just be a fluke, but I hope not.
Given that there are these laws in place and the influences of the church, it must be very, very hard for people to come out. But coming out is one of those ways that change can be applied. If you see somebody and like the TV show, how hard is it for people to come out in Nigeria?
It's very hard. And, you know, I many times I've been approached by people who would love to come out, and I've told them that I don't think coming out is a good idea, because I looked at the price that I had to pay. And, you know, many times I've been asked if I would do it again, and I'm not sure if, looking at what has happened to me, if I had the guts to want to do it again. But I'm happy to say now that I'm not the only one that have done it. You know, we've had a couple of people who have come out, who have been bold enough to not just come out about their sexuality, but also come out about their HIV status, which I think is commendable. And this is giving more and more people the opportunities to be open about it. I'm hoping that one day we will be like Uganda and be able to have a pride in Nigeria. It's still a long way to go, but I think we can do it.
Part of your journey took you into the sphere of HIV and prevention and programs. Again, how hard is it to deliver that, and how important is that to you as something that you wanted to do? Because I know you had a friend, Ibrahim. Can you tell us a bit about Ibrahim?
Yeah, well, you know, I went to university to study theatre arts. I've always wanted to act. I've always loved acting. And then my best friend contracted HIV, and he died of AIDS. And his death became the catalyst for me to get into activism. I'd never wanted to be an activist. I just, you know, wanted to live my life, get on with it, and do what I had to do. And unfortunately, I found myself in a position where I have to start doing community mobilization, doing HIV work. And it was hard, challenging, not so much because of getting the message across, but because of how we have to bury our friends every week. And it was very much about, okay, so who's going to be next? So we were young. We're, you know, innocent, but we're also facing the reality of, my God, we just lost a friend next week. Who's going to be next? And it became a burden on us. And to so many of us, activism was very much about surviving. Even up until now, across Nigeria, for LGBT people, activism is not just about, I want to hold somebody's hand, or I want to kiss somebody, or I want to get married. It was very much about, I want to see tomorrow. I want to be able to be here. I want to be protected. And that's what we were doing with HIV. And it was like, you know, every time we try to get a message across to the community, we always meet different form of challenges. So we tell people that having unprotected sex is not advisable, but we don't have the weapon or the instrument for the alternative, so we don't have access to condom. And if we have access to condom, we don't have access to lubricant. And then we tell people don't have sex without condom, but we don't have condom to give them.
Is that because of the church, or is that just because of financial reasons?
No, it wasn't. The church had nothing to do with it. I think it was very much about access. So we don't really have access to all these things, and to have access to condom, you have to go and buy it. So, you know, if you don't have money, why would you want to buy condoms? And then to have condoms, one thing is to have condoms, which are so much in a way designed around heterosexual sex. Then how do you have access to lubricants? And again, in Nigeria, HIV messaging was mainly for heterosexual sex. So they were not talking about gay sex. And so many gay people live in this world of the fact that, oh, HIV is what affects straight people. It doesn't affect us. And also we had a huge stigma in the community that we couldn't just call out the name of what was killing us.
How does that stigma, how is that seen? Is it verbal? Is it physical?
It's very verbal. It's very verbal that...
Could you lose your job?
Yeah, well, it's not some. Well, if you're out anyway, as a gay person, you're never going to get a job. If you're HIV positive, your chances of having a relationship within the gay community is close to nothing, because nobody wants to be seen with a guy who's got HIV, because nobody wants to die. And so it was a multi-layer challenges for the community. It was really, really difficult. And because of that, many of us were just practically living in denial.
Last year, Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan signed some very harsh anti-gay laws in. It brought in up to 14 years imprisonment for same-sex sexual activity. Now, at the time, you were quoted as saying that you were happy about it. Now, I'm throwing a little grenade there, but can you explain that for us?
Yeah, well, you know, having fought for gay rights, for acceptance in a way, and having a law that would protect me, not necessarily say, oh, we are recognizing gay rights, but having a law that would protect me as a person for almost my adult years, to actually have a law on the table to say, yes, now I have something to fight. For me, it was a huge relief. Many people don't understand. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Many people don't understand, but also the fact that the law proves that I exist.
You knew the enemy.
Yes, exactly.
We are speaking with Bisi Alimi from Nigeria, an activist. You're on World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Worldwide Wave. We take you around the world one country at a time.
A bit of action happening on our Facebook page, W3 Joy, Worldwide Wave. Franklin and Liz are liking your photo there, Busy. And Greg's posted to our the picture of our tweet, or our retweet from Westboro Baptist Church. He's posted hashtag friends in low places. Yeah.
Says it all, really.
Tonight we are in Nigeria with our guest, Busy. In many African nations, gay people are used as a political punching bag. Even just yesterday, presidential candidate for the elections in Ghana has come out and said that gay people should be killed by firing squad. What is driving this intense passion from politicians against gay people?
I think it's a level of emptiness. And like you said, it's about wanting to win election. And, you know, you see these politicians, they have no substance. They don't have programs. They don't have agenda on, you know, how to reduce poverty, how to build more houses, how to improve healthcare for the people, you know, how to improve the economy. They don't have anything to say. And because it's so cheap to build your agenda on hate anyway, and you pick on a victim that presumably everybody hates like you, and you set up a sensation around them, and that predominantly what is happening on the continent of Africa. And I just wish that, you know, like the situation that happened in Nigeria, whether it's for good or for bad, the fact that despite the fact that Jonathan signing the Anti-Same-Sex Marriage Act of 2013, thinking that I would give him another 4 years, but Nigerians said, no, that's not the reason why we've elected. We elected you to make our lives better. It's not about you signing an anti-gay law, and they kicked him out. And I think there'll be that reawakening on the continent.
There have been many, many calls from all over the international community for changes, even small ones, to various anti-gay laws across Africa. President Obama, the most recent one. Does the international community need to take a different approach with Africa?
Yeah, I think speaking from a position of we're better than you is not going to help anyone. I've said it many times, and I'll say it again. I think we need to create a system of mentorship, of engagement. Most importantly, we need to engage. We need to understand what is driving this. And this is not going to be, we will never see change unless we invest in education. People need to know otherwise. People need to engage otherwise. People need to, when they are vocal, they need to be intellectually vocal about the issue. You cannot, you know, challenge people whose belief is rooted in a certain religious settings to go against those religious. And we see it in America, even, you know, with the issue of Kim Davis and the rest, where, you know, it will always be there. People that have this religious belief, we want to protect their religious belief, and trying to antagonize them about what they believe in possibly might not be the easy way out. It's about engagement and bringing human approach, human face to these issues.
you're now on the outside of Nigeria. You're in the UK. You're safe. How do you inspire? You're talking about mentorship there. How do you inspire local people, local LGBT people in Nigeria to take a stand, to speak up?
Well, you know, the organization that I started in 2005, the Initiative for Equal Rights in Nigeria, is one of the biggest organizations there, and it's been doing an amazing work to, you know, get the message out, to work with smaller organizations, build the capacity of smaller organizations. And I think from my own space, what I've been trying to do is to further engage with the system, you know, further engage with the policy setting, but also kind of provide a system of mentorship to organizations to understand, one, what the international issues are and how they can engage with international issues. And, you know, like I said, earlier this year for my 40th birthday, I set up the BCLM Foundation, and it's basically to also move away a little bit from activism to policy development, to research, to just not say, oh, we want rights, but it's about why do we want rights and what it means, not just for the LGBT community, but for our friends, for our families, for our loved ones.
You are pretty much the voice of LGBT rights in Nigeria
at the moment.
is that a big responsibility?
It is a big responsibility because, first and foremost, I'm human. And I, as human, I have my own shortcomings as well. And I think many times people forget to see that. And so when I get angry, people don't expect me to be angry over certain issues. And I don't really think that I'm the voice of LGBT community in Nigeria. I think I'm part of the voices, of the many voices that are in Nigeria, you know, from different angles, from different professions, from different realities. I'm just, you know, part of the puzzle. And like every other person that is part of that puzzle, I'm also sometimes feel like a lot is expected from me, that most times people just don't know that I'm human and I can't help myself being human in a way.
Do you want to go back to Nigeria?
You know, it's a country of my birth. It's where I spent 32 years of my life. It's a country I know on the back of my hand. I love Nigeria. I love the music. I love the nightlife. I love the food. I love the dressing. I love the weather. It's like Australia. Sun always shine. We don't have We don't have summer. Believe me, we don't have winter. I would love to go back, but again, I think I've come to appreciate, realize, and accept United Kingdom as my home.
We have had the absolute pleasure of speaking to Bisi Alemi from Nigeria, now living in UK. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It's been wonderful having Bisi here as our guest. Now, the Bisi Alemi Foundation, where can people find out more about that one?
Well, we're still, you know, in the process of building up our online presence. And if people want to know more, they can either email info@bisialemifoundation.org or they can send me a personal email if they want. It's bisi.alemi@bisialemifoundation.org. We're still hoping to build our website and doing a lot of work in Nigeria as well.
We will post that on our Facebook page, W3Joy?
Definitely. There's no way we'll miss out on that one. And with Facebook, we had messages from Liz, Angel, Hope, Scarlett, Joy's very own Royal Daltons, and a heap more. Thank you for interacting with us on Facebook this past week. Thanks for Greg with the SMS. And thank you to lovely Gordon at the front desk, as always.
And next week, we are speaking with Jane Ward, the author of a book called Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. It is an intriguing interview. We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.